You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
You've just been listening to Hot Texas with Hot Texas Swing Band. What's going on tonight?
Oh, we have a full house. We have writers in the studio with us tonight, and we are so excited to have them. And we're going to just bring them on. Please welcome Richard Prosh, curator and editor of the anthology we'll be talking about tonight, Through Western Storms. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
And then who's next? Hi. Hey. Who's coming on next?
We have John Dean Nesbitt.
And we have John joining us. And here he is. Hello, John. Welcome.
Well, hello there.
And who's next?
Nancy McCabe.
Here comes Nancy McCabe. Hi, Nancy.
Hi there.
How are you?
So happy to have you with us.
Great to be here.
One more.
Yeah, we have one more.
Jim Jones.
Jim is kind of a neighbor here in the Albuquerque area. Hello, Jim.
Hey, guys.
So we're going to just kind of go around the circle quickly. So, Richard, where are you calling us from tonight? Where are you calling in from?
So we're calling in from the middle of Missouri, right by the Missouri River.
Okay. Do you have snow?
We've got a little snow left. Yeah.
Yeah. And John, where are you joining us from?
I live in the country outside of Torrington, Wyoming, which is in eastern Wyoming in the Plains Country, north of Cheyenne, and we have snow on the ground.
And you have snow on the ground.
It's probably cold, too.
Yeah, we have wind.
And Nancy McCabe. Nancy, where are you calling in from?
I'm in northwestern Pennsylvania, right on the border of New York State and not too far from Lake Erie. So we get lake effect snow, and we're in the mountains, so we have a kind of weird climate. So, yeah, we have snow, and it's been really cold.
It's been really cold.
And the negative numbers.
Oh, you've had negative numbers. Oh,
that's cold. Yeah.
That's cold. And Mr. Jim Jones, where are you joining us from tonight?
Rio Rancho, New Mexico, right outside of Albuquerque. Nancy's just showing off. I thought we were cold here because we were down to 3 degrees a couple of nights ago. Now they're in the negative numbers and all that. So we don't have any snow right now. We've had a little bit, but not much.
Yeah. It seems like there's a little bit of a cold front going through, which is makes sense. Yeah. It's, you know, it's late January, but nothing that's keeping us all away from being together tonight. So we really thank you all for giving us your time. I think, Jim, you have a little intro for Richard that you're going to read.
Bio for Richard. Yes, we do.
And then we're going to get right into it.
Richard Prosh's work has appeared in many magazines, including Mystery Magazine and True West. Winner of the Will Rogers Medallion and multiple Peacemaker Award finalist positions, Richard took home the Spear Award from Western Writers of America for short fiction. And his 2022 novel, Pointing Boys, was a Spear Award finalist. As an anthologist, his book packages have garnered the Spear, Peacemaker, and Will Rogers Medallion for their contributors. Welcome,
Richard. We are talking tonight about this book,
right?
Western Storms. Oh my gosh, you haven't read westerns like the stories in this book. Richard is going to kind of take the lead with our guest tonight. So, Richard, we're going to ask you just one open question to get us started. Tell us a little bit about the backstory behind this collection.
So I had done a couple of collections for Western Fictioneers. We put them together and we edited those collections, but I wanted to do something a little broader this time with authors from a wider spectrum and something that would reflect sort of more of a diversity of writers. I wanted to get more of a literary feel for this, and every writer in this book, every author in this book is an award-winning author and is also a friend of mine who I've known for quite a while, several years, and I just picked them through invitation and talked to them about the premise of the book, which is through Western storms, right? It's about physical storms, but also inner storms, emotional storms, any way the writer could define a storm. We wanted to explore that and explore it as deeply as possible. I encouraged everybody to explore it as deeply as they could. And we just, as you said, we just got some wonderful, wonderful stories from everybody.
Yes, there's nothing in the collection that is like a cliche or that you don't read and go like, oh, here's that kind of story. Each one is just so unique and engaging, and really you can't put it down. You could finish a story and then take a breath. If you have time, pick it up and keep going. But you could also finish a story and say, oh, I can't wait till my lunch hour now, or I can't wait to get, back into the reading mode.
So, yeah. Right. And each of the stories, I'd like to mention that each of the stories is unique in a way. And I try to keep it kind of, the term I use is lumpy. I tried to keep it lumpy so that the stories would each be sort of different in a kind of a subtle way. So, for example, John's story, which we're going to talk about, White City, is written in first person. It's from a first person perspective of a young adult, of a 15-year-old. Whereas Jim's story, which I thought was something that Jim did that was really neat with his story, which is called Go On, it's divided up into chapters. So it's almost like a mini novel. And those chapter breaks, when I got the story, I said, what is this chapter breaks? But it almost reads like a novel. It's so in depth. Nancy's story is really got a lot of history in it. And the history of a true life character that she's exploring. And she used real live newspaper, like historic pieces from newspapers, to kind of punctuate some of the scenes in the story. So you'll read the historic, the fictional history, the narrative, and then you'll be brought into the real history of the Oklahoma land rush, which is really fascinating. So it's just great different ways that they put together their stories.
Do you have a question?
Do I have a question?
We have a moment. We could ask a question.
We can ask a question.
Yeah, you can ask a question.
Did you give your authors here any particular guidance, specific
word
things
count?
They had to come up
or
with?
Or word count or anything like that?
I can't remember if I did. I should have to ask them. I don't remember if I had a word count or not. I think I might have given them a word count because we didn't want to go too long or too short. But
yeah,
just the storms, right, guys?
I can't remember what it was,
but there was.
Yeah.
And did you give them a deadline, and did they all make it, or did somebody have to have an extension?
No, there were no extensions. Everybody just came in early. In fact, we had all the stories right away, and I think they were all pretty much original stories too. One of the things that I have kind of come to worry about a little bit with anthologies. This is the fourth anthology that I've put together, and I don't want people to just go to their trunk, go to the drawer and pull out an old story and send it. I really would like people to come up with a brand new idea, because usually those are the best that just really jump out at you. And I think everybody pretty much did that. Everybody had a new story that they were excited about and excited to share.
Richard, was there anybody else that you would want to kind of call out that helped to get this collection, not necessarily put together, but get it seen by the publisher, and anybody else that really was a dynamic part of the team?
Well, I had worked with Tiffany Schofield, who was an editor at Gale. She was the Western editor at Five Star before it shuttered, before it closed its doors. And I'd worked with her on Pony Boys, which you mentioned, one of my books. And Tiffany is now the Western editor, or was at the time of Through Western Storms. She was the Western editor at Thorndike, one of the imprints of Gale. And Thorndike does library hardbound copies of large print. And so we talked about it, and I said we were putting together this anthology, and she said, well, Thorndike would be interested in doing a large print version of it for libraries. And it's, so it is available in all the library catalogs around the country, and it's available in large print hardcover.
Yeah.
So she was really, encouraging.
One more question, I think, before we turn it over to Richard.
Yeah.
We want to talk to you about the dedication of the book.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to explain that a little bit, because you dedicated this to firefighters and first responders. And
we were quite moved, Richard, by the dedication, especially in light of what's happening in California, our old stomping grounds that is very near and dear to our heart. And we didn't know if you might like to just comment about what caused you to write this really wonderful dedication to those that are fighting fires in the West.
Well, I can read it. It's dedicated to the interagency hotshot crews, firefighters, and first responders whose storms in 2024 were far from fiction and were all too real. We who live in the West owe you our gratitude and we'll never forget your service. Several of our authors were impacted by the fires last year. Mm-hmm. I know Janie Botkin has had to evacuate her home. And she was away from her home for several weeks and didn't know what was going on, you know, just like the people in California now or the people in North Carolina, you know, when you evacuate, you don't know what's happening to all your stuff, right? All your home, all your stuff, you don't know. And Janie really did a good job of keeping us all in the community aware of what was going on. And, you know, she wasn't able to hear what was going on with her house and stuff. And Natalie Bright was also an author in the book, and she was affected by the storms, the firestorms, and the fact that we were doing storms, it just all came together, and we thought, this is what we've got to dedicate the book to the people who helped.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that, and thank you for sharing a little bit of the backstory. Richard, we're not going away, but we are turning the reins over to you. So if there is some questions and conversation you want to have with this stellar room full of authors here, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Bobby. I'd like to start with Nancy, and I'd like to ask Nancy about writing about a real character. So this isn't a character that you made up. This is a real woman, and her name is Nanita Daisy, and she was a real woman in history who lived in Oklahoma and had a great bigger than life kind of way. So could you talk about where'd you come up with the idea to write about her?
Yeah. So long, long ago, when I was a freshman in college, I got involved in this project where we were writing about the Oklahoma land openings. And we actually traveled to Oklahoma City and did research at the Oklahoma Historical Society. And I ended up writing a paper that was supposed to be a chapter in a book that was about women in the Oklahoma land openings. And I don't know whatever happened to that. I don't know if the book ever came, you know, to fruition or whatever. But when Rich approached me about this, I thought, well, like, I kept thinking about that paper and I don't know where it is. It's probably up in my attic somewhere, but I didn't. I just said, okay, you know, I think I'll read a little bit about this and see if anything sticks out to me. And the more I read about it, you know, I kept running across references to Nanita Daisy, also who called herself Kentucky Daisy. And what really struck me about her was, I mean, there's very sparse information available. But what really struck me about her was that she was considered this hellraiser, which is one of the stereotypes of women in the West. And, you know, someone who was a braggart and brash and outspoken and yet charming. But then, like a lot of the coverage of her, people, like the writing I ran across said things like, well, you know, eventually, I mean, she was involved in three land runs, basically. But then after that, there's newspaper articles that say things like, well, you know, she got married, but her husband got tired of her and left. And I thought, wait, you know, how did they know that the husband got tired of her? How do we know that she didn't get tired of him? Or, you know, there wasn't something more complicated going on. And so I really kind of wanted to probe into that idea of how, you know, we cast people according to our stereotypes, but who are they really? What can we really gather about them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And her husband was from Norway, right?
Yeah.
So he had these kind of very parochial kind of paternal things going on where, you know, what she's a little, she should stay home. And there's, you did a great job with the conflict between them, making it very clear what was going on between them. And I think not resorting to stereotype with either one.
Mm-hmm. One of my questions was, so this is not in the story, and maybe I'll write another story about it, but Nanita Daisy, in the third time she was involved in a land opening, a bunch of women established this community that was called Bathsheba. And it was like this very separatist community that they didn't allow any men in, including roosters or bulls or, you know, I mean, like nothing male was allowed. And one of my questions was like, why? Like, what happened to this woman that led her to, you know, be involved in this and to feel this way? And so I really wanted to kind of, you know, I mean, I made a lot of stuff up, but I really wanted to probe that idea too.
And I'm going to jump in and say, Jim Jones, there's a song there.
Yeah, there is. I already have one song a whole lot about like that about Annie Oakley, but it would really fit. Yeah, I thought my thought when you were talking about they referred to her as kind of a braggart and charming. And I was thinking, you just described Wyatt Earp, Buffalo Bill. I mean, you know, all these men did the same and on steroids, literally. And nobody called him out. And yet if she did it, it was somehow that wasn't right. That she was like a pioneer, I thought. That was
Yeah. And the press really seemed committed to giving her comeuppance in her later life. Like they published things that said things like, well, she's lost her looks. And it's like, well, like she's aging. Of course, who doesn't? I mean, she's lived out there and gotten sunburnt. And, you know, I mean, like her whole life, she's led this very rough life. So, of course, she's aged like anybody else. But we have to make a big point of the fact that she's lost her looks. And
we're holding up a picture that Jim found of a statue of her.
Yes.
And you can see the stakes, you know, in her hands. And I don't know if you've been there to actually see this, but it's pretty cool.
I haven't, but I'd like to. But the thing about that statue is she's on the engine of the train, which would have been an impossible thing to do. But that's the myth of her. That she rode on the cowcatcher. And like, there was all this mythology that got built up around her. And I don't know how much she contributed to it. In my story, she contributed significantly to it. But that fascinated me too, that there's just all this stuff that's really impossible. She's so mythical in the end.
But she did jump off the train at one spot, though.
Yeah.
She did. She did, yes. And she had scouted that out beforehand. And yeah, she knew exactly what land she wanted.
Yeah. So, yes, John.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yes.
Do you want to ask a question?
Very quickly, the stakes. The stakes are so important in staking out your land, I guess. And how do you, what's on those stakes that somebody could tell that it exactly was your land as opposed to somebody else's?
You know, I wish I could answer this question. I remember running across it in my research, and I think I mentioned it in the story, but I don't remember for sure how they do that, how they did that.
Okay, that's all right.
There was some indication.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, she said, I mean, in later life, the story was that she put her petticoat on the stake and, you know, marked it as hers. But other people dispute that. how would she have had time to take off her petticoat and put it on the stake and run back and get on the train?
John, had you heard of the Kentucky Daisy before? The story?
No.
I hadn't either. I had heard the term or the name, you know, in some, like in passing, but I didn't know the story at all. So I thought, wow, this is just fascinating. This is just something that I could see it becoming a longer work. Do you think that you will revisit that someday?
I actually am really interested in doing that. And maybe, I mean, I am from Kansas and I travel there, you know, frequently, you know, like once a year. And I think it would be really fun to take a detour and go to Oklahoma. And there's some other things I want to do there too. But I thought, you know, and see what more information I can find about her. But there's so many stories. I mean, I couldn't cram it all into this story. So there's a lot more to stories to be told. And I think there is a novel in it.
Mm.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I'm going to move on to John and ask about White City. It's from the point of view of a tell us about the character. Tell us about the main character, Owen. Owen is working and he meets a stranger named Tom McClure.
Right. He's a 15-year-old kid. They live in a tent city that follows the building of the railroad. And so, which was historically something that happened, you know, they had these sort of portable towns that moved along. Sometimes there were, you know, towns that kind of remained there, but also towns that moved with the railroad. And so he's in that kind of a situation, which I thought would be interesting to just have a generally rootless population like that. And so he is working in one of these businesses that's in a tent. He's working in a lodging house or kind of like a rooming house. It consists of two tents, and he meets a stranger who comes to town. So I don't know if do you want me to say more than that, or is that's kind of like the beginning kind of response to your question, I think.
Yeah, I'm gonna ask you, because I'm gonna go back and ask Nancy quickly to follow up, but first I'm gonna ask you about the storm, because there is snow, isn't there?
I mean,
your story. Yeah, and Wyoming, and there's the storms, and how did that kind of influence your thinking on writing the story?
Well, I think I'll talk real briefly about where I got the title, and that is I knew of the term White City, referring to a tent city, because I had read this book a few years back called Devil in the White City. Is anybody familiar with that?
Yeah.
And so I was kind of making an allusion to that, which is it's a story about the World's Fair in 1893 in Chicago. And the White City was the temporary city that they had while they were building. And then some of the buildings remained tents and some of the buildings remained white. But there was a serial killer who was active in Chicago at the time of the World's Fair. And so Eric Larson, the author, kind of weaves those things together. So I thought maybe a little allusion to that, you know, wouldn't do any harm. So that's kind of where I got the idea. But because it's taking place in a storm and because it's kind of this mobile, or as I say, rootless population, I thought, you know, there might be just a little bit of a foreboding sense to it, a little bit of a cold world and an impersonal world. And then at the very end, the stranger comes to town and solves the mystery and solves the problem, disappears into that whiteness. So I thought, you know, that had kind of a thematic possibility.
Yeah, that came across really well.
Thanks.
Yeah, Bobby and Jim, I wanted to say that the stories in the book, besides the diversity of, we talked about the diversity of how they're written, there's a diversity of tone, too, in that John's is a mystery. There's a lot of tragedy. There's humor. We've got a couple of stories that are just written that are just hilarious. You know, we've got something for everybody in this book.
Absolutely, yeah.
So Nancy, I was going to just go back to Nancy and ask about the storm. So how did that fit in? I didn't ask before. How did that fit in, the idea of a storm?
Yeah. So in my case, it was much more of a sort of emotional or metaphorical storm because of all the sort of stormy relationship that she has with her husband. And so there really isn't any. I kept looking through all my research for an actual literal storm and I never could find one. So. but I just wanted to say about John's, you know, I love that atmospheric, that cold, like there's something weirdly to me, like weirdly suspenseful about it. It was really hard to stop reading it. So, and you know, and also like Jim's was like so sad. So I loved all the different tones and feelings.
Yeah, it was tough times, you know, out there in a tent city. Can you believe me? How warm can you get those tents? You get too big a stove in there, you burn the tent down. So.
Richard, would this be a good time to just take a very short break and go chat a little bit about Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison? Jim Jones and us are love everything that they do for writers, and they do it for us, and they can do it for you. And this is very short. We don't really want to stop the flow, but we'd love to give a shout out to our sponsors. So don't go away. We're going to be right back after this announcement from Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. We're talking to Richard Bross, John D. Nesbitt, Jim Jones, and Nancy McCabe. Okay, we're back to you, Richard.
Back to you, Richard.
I just want to
Western Storms.
Real quick, the music to that little spot was wonderful.
Yeah, did you like that, Jim? I think you had something to do with that, didn't you?
Yeah, I wrote that with Bruce Huntington. So, yeah.
And we appreciate you giving us the courtesy to use it for that spot. Thank you always. Okay, Richard, back to you.
Well, and for those people who don't know, Jim usually shows up on Facebook once a month. Is it about once a month you show up and do a Facebook Live with your guitar?
I do.
And I've sent in a few requests a couple of times. So what I requested for this book was something of a storm, a short story about storms. And man, wow, you delivered quite a story. It was deep and compelling and gut-wrenching and yet inspirational at the same time. I thought it was incredibly inspirational at the end. And maybe it's because I grew up around some people that were like that. These are tough Texas panhandle people. So could you tell us a little bit about your story and where it came from?
Well, when you you made it clear to us about that it didn't have to be like a literal storm, and so I was trying to think of what I wanted to write about, and it actually the general idea I took from a song I'd written with my friend Alan Chapman called "Learning to Let Go," and how hard that can be, and then I have a lot of friends that live around Amarillo and the whole High Plains area, and I know a whole lot of cowboys, and they're tough, and they don't have the luxury of kind of giving into their emotions. And yet these things happen then like they happen now. You have someone who's dear to you who gets sick, and what do you do? And how do you find a way to deal with that? And so that kind of became the model is that song. And I want to say this, it's funny because you talked about me having chapters in my short story. Like that was a really smart thing that I came up with. Rich, I'd never written a short story before. This was my first one. I thought they had chapters. I don't know. Just not a lot of chapters. Good. But and the other thing, I didn't even think about this. This part actually just sort of happened, but there's a pivotal moment in the story where the cowboy who's just trying to hang on and denying that his wife is ill encounters a storm, and it's a breakthrough for him. In a lot of ways, and it's just a good old panhandle storm that came through when he was riding back to the ranch. And So that's sort of where it came from. And then the notion of the just the dignity that people had to just keep going, you know, it's not easy. And that's what they did. And those folks were tough. This was 1890, I think is what this was said. They didn't have, they were tough. They kept on going.
Yeah, the title of the story is, for those that don't know, is Go On. And that's kind of the theme, you know, as we go through the entire story. I was struck by, you know, probably in the second page or so, I realized that Rebecca was probably going downhill. And, it wasn't necessarily going to get better. And yet there was this compelling, and I credit your writing as just being so good, just so bottom line good that it would just carry me along. It was compelling to keep, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Maybe he's going to throw something in there to, and you did, you threw in the emotions, you know, the emotions of the kids and the protagonist, John, the husband who has to go through this and his inner storm. And it just, it pulled me right along. Really well done.
Thank you.
What did you guys think, John and Nancy? What did you think of the story?
You know, I found John's denial so poignant, like the way that he just he can't for so long fathom that she won't get well. And there was a kind of suspense to that too, like, because I kept thinking, oh no, you know, I mean, he's going to eventually figure it out. But I don't know, that just, I think enriched that character for me a lot. You know, it just seems so real and so touching.
Yeah, I thought the story carried me very well. I like it when I'm reading something and I forget who wrote it. And I know Jim, of course, you know, I forget who wrote it. I forget, you know, why I'm reading it. As we were talking about his story a minute ago and about yours also, Nancy, I forgot that these were storms. I mean, I was just remembering what was going on in this story. I mean, the story that takes on its own life.
That's a really good point, John. You know, everybody I mentioned before, everybody in the book is a friend of mine that I've known. And when I got these stories, I kind of thought, you know, oh, this will be a John Nesbitt story. This will be a Nancy story. And when I got them and I just kind of mixed them up, I didn't read them in order as they came in. I put them aside in a pile and then I would read two or three and I mixed them up. And very often, just as you said, I didn't think about who I was reading. I thought about the story because they were all that good just to pull this in. Yeah.
Can I make a very quick comment to Jim? The dialogue is wonderful. The dialogue between John and Becky or Rebecca, and then with the kids. And when they talk about a dress and he remembers a dress of hers. And I think maybe she actually really hadn't worn it in a long time because he finds it in mm-hmm. the closet. Right. And I thought that was such a wonderful touch. I enjoyed the entire story, but I just thought the dialogue between characters and when he's with his children and just was just wonderful.
Yeah. It's, you know, the stuff with the kids, and I don't want to spoil anything, but they start out kind of clueless and just worried and they don't know what's going on. And with his denial, he is just not helping them at all. And part of his journey to come to terms with this includes helping the kids, and which was so important. And he realized that if he loses his wife, he's the only parent. And the part about wondering if he ever had any fun with his dad and thinking he probably did, but you know, it's all kind of work focused and he didn't take the boys fishing and stuff like that. So it was tried to cram a lot of stuff in there.
I thought it was a great teaching moment for everybody is because so Edna, for the wife, Edna,
Becky. Rebecca.
See, I'm getting my characters for different stories, you know? But I thought it was a great teaching moment for the two young sons and for the father. Yeah. You know, the father's kind of in denial and the poor kids, they really don't know what's going on. So it's kind of, we tie it all together. So
something really striking to me too is like when she died, I thought, oh, what's he going to do? Is he going to call the coroner or what? You know, and then he goes out and digs a hole and buries her. And I was like, oh my God. Like, of course that's what people had to do, but yeah.
Yeah, and then they had to go on and do their chores.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's you know, that really hit home for me too, because I grew up on a farm and you always had to go do the chores, you always had to go milk the cows. It didn't matter what happened. It didn't matter if you were at, you know, a funeral or a wedding. Either one, you know, good times and bad times. You always had to stop. You had to stop whatever you're doing and go milk the cows.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I sort of became aware of as I was writing it, I didn't want to overuse it, but there's so many ways that you say go on. You know, like a couple of times he's like, go on, you know, and right. Other times he's go on. And so different layers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to believe that you haven't, you said this was your first short story?
Yeah. One of the things I was really aware of as I started doing it is that writing a short story for me was a lot more like writing a song than it was like writing a novel. And I've done both. And you know, in a short story as well as in a song, you don't have much time and you don't have the luxury of kind of stringing it out. And so you got to really condense that story and make it meaningful and have an arc to it and everything. You know, a song is about 3 minutes, and this thing I think was like 4,000, 5,000 words is all. So it was so that helped me actually, I think, kind of think about what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And each of you have done other things as well. You've written short stories, you've written longer works. I think, Nancy, you've got 9 or so books, nice. And you've also been published in newspapers. Yeah, tell us about that.
Sorry, I missed part of the work. Oh, other work. I notice I'm the only person, the only writer here that's not wearing a cowboy hat. And I've written in a lot of different genres. You know, I've done a lot of creative nonfiction, memoir, but then also I've done I have a young adult novel. I have a middle grade novel that's coming out in a couple months. I have a comic novel. You know, I have a really big variety of things. My young adult novel has some science fiction aspects to it, some historical aspects also. My middle grade novel has kind of a ghost story. So, you know, I like the idea of, I don't like the idea of genre in some ways. Because I think that everything we write can, you know, really good work borrows from a whole lot of different genres, which I felt that way. I mean, I've jumped around in this book and read a bunch of stories, and I just read and reread Jim's and John's stories in the last couple of days. And what I really liked was, like, there is like this sense of, I mean, yeah, they all take place in the West and they all have something to do with some kind of storm. But I really just love the idea that we're drawing from a lot of different conventions.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And mm-hmm. Of interest, some of the Western fans out there that follow Rendezvous with a Writer out West, they might be interested to know that you have a historical memoir piece about a literary childhood with Laura Ingalls.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a creative nonfiction book that's about traveling to sites related to children's literature that I loved as a kid, rereading the books from an adult perspective and thinking about that, and then going to various tourist sites. And I went to all the Laura Ingalls Wilder sites in the Midwest, you know, which is where most of them are. One of them is in, actually, one is like 30 minutes from me, and then there's one in upstate New York. But so I went to all these different places and, you know, thought about the ways that they contrast with the way they're presented in the books, right? Which sometimes is a little disappointing, but because they're very touristy. But yeah, I've been very involved with a lot of Laura Ingalls Wilder studies, and of course she was somebody who was like really groundbreaking with the idea of the Western for kids.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, John, how many books have you written?
Oh, I don't have an exact count, but it's around it's more than 50, but it's you know, it's around there. They're not all the same, you know. Some of them are a little shorter, but but anything, you know, anything that comes under its own cover. So, for example, I did a monograph. We're told not to call it a monograph, call it a booklet. In graduate school, we call those things monographs. But anyway, it was a booklet on another writer, on Robert Rorapaw. Well, I put as much work into that as I would into writing a novel, but it comes out, I don't know, I don't remember now, 50 pages or 80 pages or something like that, you know, academic work. So, but I mean, I claim that on the list. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have written a lot of short stories.
Quite a few short stories and quite a few of them in collections. Uh-huh.
And now you have a memoir as well.
That's right. Yes. It came out in December, and it's a memoir. And for people who aren't familiar with that term, that's like a selective autobiography. It's the story of a person's life, but it's not the whole story. It kind of like focuses on one aspect or on one phase in a person's life or one key experience or something like that.
Mm. So can you tell us a little?
Yeah, you can't tell your whole life story unless you've never done anything and you're not very old, you know. So you've got to figure out some angle on it. So mine is called Boy from the Country, as in the old expression. You can take the boy from the country, but you can't take the country from the boy. And so kind of part of my idea is, you know, I'm the same guy I always was. And Nancy, you'll be happy to know that I'm wearing a black hat on the cover of that, too. You know, a picture of me when I was about 20. That's why I was really happy that we were able to get that on the cover. At any rate, it's about a boy who grows up in rural poverty and a difficult family situation, has a little trouble with the law, goes to school, gets educated. I mean, that's my story. And goes on to have a career as a college professor and a writer. So that's kind of it. That's kind of laid out in the preface. I sort of have it memorized. That's the arc of the story. And so that's kind of what determined what I put in and what I didn't. Although, you know, some things maybe have kind of, I need to tell this story. So I hope the connection isn't too tenuous, you know, like the pet raccoon or something like that.
What are you working on right now, Jim?
Real quick, I just want to say John Nesbitt's also a poet. He's done everything. So I think he may have even written some songs with some folks, I think, haven't you, John?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. W.C. Jamison did a whole CD of my stuff, and then Carol Markstrom has recorded one of my songs.
Yeah. Watch out for that W.C. Jamison guy. He's bad.
We met him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. So you ask what I'm up to these days? A bunch of stuff. I was trying to slow down this year and I'm failing miserably. I've got my next novel, which is the fifth and probably last book in my Halo, my Moon series, is coming out end of May, early June. I have a children's book. My publisher decided to take the first two, which were shorter, and put them with the third one and make one big volume. So that'll be coming out in April. I'm working on a live album project with my friend Alan Chapman. Two-thirds of it will be old traditional cowboy songs and folk songs like Wayfaring Stranger and then, you know, things like Little Joe the Wrangler. But also the other third will be our music, songs we've written. So I'm doing that. We're making major progress with our friend Jake Stettler, Randy Houston and I are with our documentary about the Scottish cowboys that came over Scotland during the clearances, and I'm working with a lady who's a screenwriter, and we've got a script and a plan for the whole series for a streaming series based on Rustler's Moon, my first album. I mean, first novel, which came from a song, and trying to relax and have fun too, and failing miserably with that. So,
all right.
I'm looking at time. This has just been so much fun, and it's just been delightful to host all of you. But I unfortunately have to look at that clock on the wall. So, what I would love is for each one of you, if you don't mind, giving a very succinct answer to. As a reader, are you able to enjoy the genre in which you write in? And then also tell us where the listeners can find your books, where your website is, and that type of thing. So, Richard, we're going to start with you.
I can enjoy the Western genre, though. I probably read older stuff. Like, I would go back and read some of the pulp work from the 20s and 30s and some of that. Because what I'm writing now or what I'm editing now, I don't really want to have an influence too much. I want to approach that in a fresh way. But I read everything, and I read a lot of historical nonfiction.
Okay. And where can people find you, follow you, and get your books?
They can find me at www.richardprosch.com. That's Richard, PROSCH.com. And at Amazon. And I brought, Bobby, you said we should bring along a few books.
Sure.
So I would like to encourage people, if you like short story anthologies, to look for, it's backwards on the thing there, but this is called Over Western Trails. And this was an anthology we did. And a couple of people in this anthology won some awards for that. In this book, which is under Western Stars, we had a Spur Award winning story from this book. And then the new book, of course, is Through Western Storm. So you kind of see the series in the titles there.
Wonderful.
And those are all great short story anthologies with some of the best Western writers around today.
And thank you, Richard, for being here and for organizing this tonight.
Thank you.
We look forward to having you back February 20th with three other authors from the collection. So we're going to move on to John D. Nesbitt. John, are you able to read the genre that you write in, or is it tough to do? Do you want to edit it while you're reading it?
Well, I did my doctoral dissertation on the Western novel, so I have a pretty broad familiarity with it. And so I can read quite a few different things. And when I'm kind of preparing to another writing project, I like to read kind of a scattering of things. And so very frequently I'll read something pretty early. Like I like to go back and read B.M. Bauer. I don't know if you people know her. She was a Montana writer shortly after the turn of the century in the early 1900s. Kind of about the time of Caroline Lockhart also, which I think is a real interesting character. And then I'll read some of the people in the 30s and 40s, like Luke Short and Ernest Haycox. And then maybe I'll read something a little bit more contemporary. And so, but I read it all. I mean, I can't just abandon myself and say, well, let's see what's going to happen next. You know, I'm studying this stuff in a, you know, in not a really rigorous way, but I'm reading it. And some of it, very often I'll read things that I read a long time ago. So maybe I have my notes from then also. So, yeah, mm-hmm. So I can read it. All right. I think if I'm reading something contemporary, present company excluded, but if I'm reading something contemporary, like what contest judging, that's kind of hard sometimes because, you know, for one thing, you get a little bit of sameness. You keep finding things that resemble one another. And then also you're kind of looking for reasons to rank things. And so I think you're automatically going to be, you know, kind of critical that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where can people find you, John, buy your books and such?
Okay, to sort of get information on me, you can find me at my website, www.johndnesbitt.com. And the easiest place to find my works is on Amazon. And if you go to my website, most of those links will take you to Amazon also. But if you go to Amazon and then if you find one of my works there, then if you click on my name, it'll bring up a page with, you know, all the others.
Great. And thank you again for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you very much.
Nancy McCabe, on to you.
Yeah, so if I didn't read in the genres that I write in, I wouldn't read anything because I try so many different kinds of things. But I do read voraciously in everything. I agree with John that, you know, I'm always reading like slightly critically. And you know, if a book doesn't grab me in 100 pages, I quit. You know, I mean, I'm fine with not finishing something.
Yeah.
But I do. I mean, I read like in every genre. So, yeah.
And where can people find you and follow you?
Yeah. So I did bring, this is, I don't know if you can see it. This is my book.
There we go.
Time. Which is my time travel book for young adults. my book, The Pamela Papers, which is my comic novel. And then my book that's coming out in April, which is Fires Burning Underground for Middle Grade Readers. My website is www.nancymccabe.net. And of course, my books are on Amazon and all those other places. So
thank you, Mr. Gene Jones. We are almost out of time, but we got another moment for you, sir. Tell us where we can find your books and such and music.
www.jimjoneswestern.com. It has everything. It has all my books. It has my music. Corey Kretzinger with Midstate Design set it up and did a wonderful job. So anything you need to know that I want you to know about me, you can find there.
All right.
We are so almost out of time. I don't think we have time for the quote, sweetie.
Yes, all right.
All right. We want to thank everybody for being with us tonight. Next week, we will have a John Goodwin and Emily Goodwin. They are with Galaxy Press. And we will be talking about the L. Ron Hubbard Presents of the Writers of the Future 40th anthology. These are contest winners. It's a very interesting collection of stories. So do join us again next week. And I think
we're done.
I think we say thank you, and thank you. We'll see you down the road.
It's always a great day out west. Thanks,
folks. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us.
Bye. Thank you.